Well, now, it is my privilege to introduce our workshop leader again for the second session. Please help me to offer a warm, flurry, kind of welcome to our workshop leader, David Inn.
Combine those all together, it sounds like you have 500 people here. all four.
Yeah.
My name is Dave Marquez, recovered alcoholic.
Hi, David.
And for those of you that have just joined us, my God-given sobriety is May 9th, 1993. Okay, so we left off at craving, and anybody have any, before I ask the question, understand that we got 3 hours left of this. So all this is really going to be is an overview of my experience with the steps out of the book, and that I'm clearly jumping around. Not jumping around, but skipping a lot of stuff. If there's something specific in the book pertaining to where we're at, please bring it up. Like I said, I don't want this necessarily, I know it started out kind of a monologue, but I don't want it to be a monologue. I'd like it to be a dialogue. And I would encourage your inquiries, your questions. Also, the one of the things that I like to offer in any workshop that I have ever done, and that is a shared reciprocating spiritual consent of one thing. And that is that I'm willing to receive any question you may have regarding your recovery, your alcoholism, to me, directed at me, in regards to anything I may have to say about what's in the book and my experience with it. And that that should and that that would reciprocate into me being able to ask you questions too. Okay? If you want to participate on that level, I completely understand. Not a big deal. But I offer that to you as a group. I'd like to be this, like I said, I'd like this to be a dialogue. If you're unclear about stuff, let's try to get clear. Okay? There's nothing written here that I have to get through all 12 steps. So.
Have you even just operated on if you got sober and you're not drinking today, how do you think you got that week?
That's right. Yeah, we're going to pick up from that. We're going to pick up from that.
In the book, it says, "Work your head to a man." Who's the man?
To any other walking soul, 2 feet. It's a figure of speech. Okay. So the question, Jaime, right? He said that I left off at the question is, if it's beyond your mental control to stop once you start, how'd you get a sobriety date? I can't answer that for you. And if you're sitting across the table from me, I'm not going to answer that for you. And if it takes 3 weeks to go answer that for you to answer that question, then it's going to take 3 weeks to answer that question. I'm not going to rush anybody through the steps. I'm not going to rush it. I'm not going to move somebody through principles in this book, spiritual principles in this book, just to say you've got done through the steps. Especially something as important as that. At 9 years sober, I came under new sponsorship. It was still Big Book sponsorship, but it was different Big Book sponsorship. The Big Book sponsorship I came from was predominantly information only. They would just, what's the book say? Do it. There's very little experience of their own that was shared with that. Which is fine. It was great. But I soon realized that what I had up here was a bunch of knowledge, but had not connected to it with any real experience other than the doing of the steps, but that it still was on an intellectual level. And where I paid for that was having what the book calls a personal relationship with God and a conscious contact. I still, at 8, 9 years, had no clue of what that really was. Okay? And so just kind of flying by the seat of my pants by the grace of God in AA and just doing what it told me to do, you know. But I still had no real solid personal relationship with God, like this book talks about. And the wheels came off because of it. Self-knowledge will not overcome your alcoholism, even self-knowledge about this principle. It actually becomes a trap. So when I was brought into the sponsorship I'm under now, and have been for 12 years, they were not only interested in what's the book say, but what's your experience? Which, going back to turning statements into questions. So the question after the craving, if I've identified that I have the craving, that yes, it's true, that once I start to drink, a craving is set off that's beyond my mental control to stop. The question was, then how'd you stop? I'm completely convinced. There's no right or wrong answer to that. What the answer that they wanted me to come up with was the truth. They were more interested in getting at the truth than building a coven of sponsees. Okay? Maybe I don't need to be here. Maybe I'm just crazy. But I'm not alcoholic. And I need to go and find the help that I really need, that I'm not going to find in Alcoholics Anonymous. I can tell you that when I first came out of the psych ward and went to meetings, and I got around these guys, and it was pretty clear to them that I didn't know if I was really an alcoholic. They told me to stop announcing myself as one because I didn't know the truth. And the premise for that was, and it's true, that this is a spiritual basis of life. This is a spiritual program. You can't start a spiritual program based on a lie, even if it's by accident or ignorance. It short-circuits it. Okay? So they're more interested in me getting to the truth, but they weren't going to help me get there other than to just present with me the information and check back with me on my experience with this information. I wasn't to bend the book around me. Okay? I was to, do I fit in this book? Am I the alcoholic that's described in this book? Yes or no? So if I have this craving, and I do, how do I get a sobriety date? So I can't answer that for you.
But I've been drinking since I don't know how long. Doing that also, people came hand in hand with me. But I come to a point where I lock myself up in a room, and I've always believed in God, and I've always thought I had a good relationship with Him. But due to my usage, I lost that connection, and but I yet knew that this is not where I want to be. I'm tired. I've been doing this for 30 years, and I'm done. I'm tired of it. I need help to get away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Be clean, get off the booze and off the mat. And I would sit down and I would have a conversation with with God, my higher power, and be in and be out, and I can tell you it's a miracle that he just took it away from me. He just literally, I have no craving for it, I have no obsession for it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really had to work the steps the way you should. And I tried that before, and then, but my answer to that would be, a real faithful belief in God, your higher power, and a constant contact, a conversation, a constant connection with that power. For me, is what did it. I just asked you that you were going in that direction because I wanted to hear what the other would.
Thank you. All right. So the book says that the next part of the book from page 23 at the top to about 43, end of more about alcoholism, the primary focus is going to be why is it, even though I know that once I start to drink I can't stop, I have this craving, and knowing that, with or without AA's help, why is it that I keep taking the first drink? Why isn't that knowledge enough to keep me from taking the first drink. Even if it, after a week, years, tons of meetings, decades, multiple decades, why is it that all of a sudden I go back? Okay? So we throw around this word called the mental obsession, right? Why is it we take the first drink? The book even says that knowing this thing about the craving is academic and pointless if we would never took the first drink in the first place to set off the craving. So the main problem centers in the mind. You know, that's a very interesting statement, because for years I read that the main problem is the mind. But that's not what it says. The main problem centers in the mind. The Creator didn't give me a broken mind. He didn't give you a broken mind either. Okay? But something's at work in the center of the mind that drives me to a place of insanity and take the first drink. That's why you have so many examples in the next 20 pages about this weighing of the results of drinking versus not drinking, and we always somehow disregard the truth about what happens with our drinking and drink anyway. Okay? The book will go on to say the truth. Now, the interesting thing about the book is you meet people in AA and you'll be interested in if they're getting the help they need, and you'll ask them, have you read the book? Do you read the book? And they'll say yes. Why? To get you off their ass. It doesn't matter if you are or you aren't. Right? That's that alcoholic, rebellious, grandiose, egocentric narcissism that comes rearing up and says, get out of my face, right? But if you ask somebody the next question, don't let them get away. Ask them, do you know how to read the book? Now you got deer in the headlights. Okay? And the book will tell you exactly how to read the book at the end of the preface. It tells you to consider three things while reading the book. It says personal stories. We'll address that in a second. It says to ask yourself three things as you're reading the personal stories. Has this ever happened to me? Have I felt like this? And most important, it makes that qualifier. Do I believe this will work for me too? How do you know what it is? This program, says the program. Will this program work for me too? How do you know? Well, if you move through the book, you'll realize there's statements, there's very strong statements like must, have to, necessary, convinced, that kind of verbiage. But then you also have softer direction, like we think, we believe, we should not. Okay, don't do this, do this. You know, we have that. Okay? So, well, David, that's only talking about personal stories. But let's not forget that the title page of the book, which covers the entire book, is the story of how thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. So those three questions are as appropriate, if not more so, for the first portion of the big book, which is the recovery program from the doctor's opinion, or pardon me, the forewords to the page 164, as it is for the personal stories. Because the personal stories aren't going to give you instruction. They're just giving you their experience with the instruction, but the instruction's in the front. Okay? The first portion of the volume. So getting back to where we left off about obsession, what the book says about, begins to start talking about, talks about the truth. And it says that the truth about an alcoholic, the reason that they drink, is they don't know. They don't know why they take the first drink. That's the truth. Okay? And so, I've had some sponsors go, but why? Right? I don't know. We don't know. That's the thing. We don't know. Right? So here's, okay, so here's why it's dangerous, at least in my experience, to just let a guy go by saying, are you powerless over alcohol? And they say, yes. Okay, great. Let's go to step two. This is why it's dangerous. Right here is where it becomes really dangerous, because I know everybody I've ever sponsored have a bunch of things cooked up in their mind about what makes them take the first drink. And what are these? Lurking reservations and notions. These are cracks in the foundation that they can slip through at any moment. And if I just let it go at, yeah, I'm powerless, I'm doing that person a disservice. I at least got to give them the opportunity to wake up to any potential lurking notions or ideas that they may have that will keep them from taking the first drink. Because if I think I know what the day is going to look like, what's going to be feeling like, or what I'm thinking about that takes me back to the first drink, I'm going to use the opposite of that or a solution to that as my defense, as a mental or emotional defense, which I don't have. It's an illusion. Because the truth is, I don't know. And how do I know that? So we got 20 pages with several stories, short stories, of people describing a bunch of different mental defenses that they had going on. And if I'm turning statements into questions on myself, and I go, have I ever done that? Have I felt like that? And did I drink again? Did it change how I drank? Could I control it or moderate it? Could I stop entirely under the same circumstances that Fred had or Jim had or the man of 30? Could I? No. Hospitals, meeting with people in AA, getting exposed to AA, jails, health problems, relationships, whatever it may be. Okay, good therapy? Does it get any better than Carl Jung at the time? All right. That guy drank too. All right. And he even told him what the solution had to be. Right? So if I start doing that, I go, that tried that, didn't work that. All of a sudden I start becoming convinced of the truth. The truth is, I don't know why I take the first drink. With everything on the line, or nothing on the line, because I don't know. We can work with that. It's much more difficult to work with somebody that still has answers. Remember, this book is described as for somebody that's out of answers. And you come to me asking for help, and I offer help, and you go, you got answers for me? I'm sorry, I can't help you. You got to get rid of those answers. Or find somebody that understands recovery with a head full of answers. All right? Because I know people. There's people in the room already that are out of answers. Various lengths of sobriety.
I mean, I guess that's my question. How does someone who appears to be an alcoholic can go multiple years without ever taking a drink? How does that even happen? That wasn't my experience. I mean, how to be untreated and, okay. I mean, someone who seems to be an alcoholic and...
I'll get there. Okay. I'll get there. Okay?
Yeah.
So the book starts talking about what I just said. Can't... don't know why we take the first drink. So then it starts going through this litany of mental defenses that we may or may not have used. Would anybody like to offer up what they think the obsession is? We use the word probably a million times in every meeting. What is the obsession? What is the alcoholic obsession? Okay, what else? Don't be shy now, because I hear you guys giving out all kinds of definitions of that in meetings.
Just taste that feeling, like
whenever it was enjoyable, or that in your mind, that you can talk about
again.
Okay.
How was it I can have all that fun without any of that trouble?
Okay.
Justified by anger, worries, taking drinks without thinking at all.
Okay. You know what the book says about the great obsession of every alcoholic? is that they're not.
Yeah.
And that can take innumerable forms. See, a lot of times when I hear people talking about the obsession, and I did this too, I fell into that same trap because you don't know what you don't know until somebody shines a light of truth on it. Okay? You know, the obsession of drink is this thing that's pounding on me in the back of my head saying, drink, 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 drink. And then you have a good sponsor that knows, understands his own alcoholism and what's described in this book and says, every time? Well, not every time. And he starts, and the book is this, have you ever had a strong desire to not drink and drink anyway? Absolutely. Does the desire not to drink keep you sober, David? No. But I wasn't convinced of that until I was convinced of that. You don't go to, look, Marine Corps ordered me to go to four meetings a week. I went to three a day. You don't go to 1,000 meetings in a year because you don't desire to stop drinking. You go because you desire to stop drinking. But if you lack power and the group isn't the higher power and you're a real alcoholic, then you're probably not going to stop drinking just because you desire not to. Hear this. My strong desire to stop drinking will always succumb to the desire to drink, which is described in the doctor's opinion. You know, by definition of membership in the short form, I haven't qualified for membership in AA by the short form in the third tradition for 20 years. I don't wake up with a desire or without a desire to drink or not. But I do qualify by the long form, and that is I'm an alcoholic. But I don't even qualify according to the short form. There has not been one time since May 9th where I woke up and said, oh God, please keep me sober today. It's never happened. Now, I thanked him for it, but it's never been a working part of the mind to go, oh God, I choose not to drink today. Or please don't let me drink, I desire not to. That's never been a working part of the mind. When it's gone, it's gone. If there's no motor in the car, you can't drive the car. You can sit in it all day long, but it's not going to go anywhere. God removed the motor. Stole it. What else does it say? Lost the power of choice? Right? Most alcoholics have lost the power of choice. Uh-oh. Does it mean there's some people in AA that do still have the power of choice? If I'm going to trust what the book says, then I have to be open to that. But the only thing that really matters is whether I am or not. Do I still have that? And the only way to do that is to go through my own experience based on what's described as an alcoholic in this book. Okay? It says most alcoholics have lost the power of choice. I wrote inventory for 10 years about people in AA talking about how they have choice. Well, the book says that most alcoholics have lost the power of choice. So, maybe there are some that do. But it's irrelevant. And the only time it's relevant is when I'm asking somebody for help, they have to be a real alcoholic. Or if they're asking me for help. The book is very clear in working with others about being satisfied that they are a real alcoholic before offering the help. Does that require judgment? You bet it does. There's a difference between judgment and condemning. There's a difference between judging and being critical and criticizing. We make judgments every day about everything. You know, people come in and say, AA doesn't judge, but then they say, stick with the winners. If they look for a sponsor, but then they say, then they give you all these criteria of how you should look for a sponsor, but you're not supposed to judge anything. Look, we make judgments every day about everything. It's when we start getting on the side of being critical and criticizing and condemning is when we start getting on the wrong side of that. We make judgment all the time.
So you make.
Why do I go to one meeting and not another? Because I made a judgment about both meetings. Was it right or wrong? I don't know. Find out in an inventory.
So you're trying to make a judgment about whether they're an alcoholic before you actually take
this is what the book says. It talks about finding out. Are they the real McCoy or are they not? Why waste time if they're not? Okay. Lots of power. Okay, so power of choice. Then what's it talk about? It talks about remembering your last drunk. That most alcoholics will drink within a month of their last drunk. That the memory and suffering is insufficient. So, has a memory or suffering of my drinking ever kept me from taking the first drink? Absolutely not. So I can't rely on that anymore. Then it talks about the consequences. Fear of what's going to happen if I do drink. Bill talked about that straight up. He said, fear sobered me for a bit. And if you read in his story, he talks about all of the different kinds of things he was afraid of. Going to the loony bin, dying, his wife, never making it back to business. There are all kinds of fears. That was on top of the psychotherapy, Abby, and everything else. He had that all going on. I had all that going on in March of 1993 when I started my first run. I had that all going on. Kicked out of the Marine Corps, had an honorable discharge, I'm puking blood, I've been to the psych ward, I've been hanging around AA for a year, I got a bunch of head knowledge about what drunks are and what they aren't, what the solution is and what it isn't. Okay? I can remember where I've been. I have a pretty clear understanding where I'm going if I drink again, but I still drink again. I have a desire not to, as evidence of my participation in AA. Got a roll of quarters in my pocket. Call my sponsor before. Right. I lack power. And then what it goes on to say, it talks about when we start getting beyond human aid, we start taking drinks without even thinking about it at all. And what I've just described to you is just a general breakdown of how our book presents the obsession manifests itself. What obsession? That I'm not alcoholic. Now the book will say other people. Anytime the book says other people, it's talking about non-alcoholics. Okay? So then I want to share with you, and this is going to address your question. And I'll read this. You guys want to follow along. 24. Bottom of page 24 says, when this sort of thinking is fully established, it's talking about taking a drink without thinking at all and all the other mental defenses that don't work. When this sort of thing is fully established in an individual with alcoholic tendencies, he has probably placed himself beyond human aid and unless locked up may die or go permanently insane. True story. Okay? These stark and ugly facts have been confirmed by legions of alcoholics throughout history. Okay, look in the mirror. Now here's where it turns on us. But for the grace of God, there would have been thousands more convincing demonstrations somebody wants to stop cannot. Now hear that. But for the grace of God, there would have been thousands more convincing demonstrations. I don't see anybody drunk here. We are all those convincing demonstrations. We all can be those convincing demonstrations. How do I get a sobriety date when I can't stop once I start? Why is it, after a year and a half of doing everything wrong, sober, I still had a sobriety date and was still brought to the willingness of actually seeking a relationship with God? Doing everything wrong. Time is irrelevant. If I'm a real alcoholic, 21 years. Certainly I've made mistakes in spiritual living in 21 years. How about 21 minutes? Okay? If I'm a real alcoholic, and I'm still sober, it's really about this, the grace of God. The reason that I have a sobriety date that I wasn't looking for, that I can't pick, is by this grace of God. There's something that came between me and alcohol and did for me what I could not do for myself. I was genuinely looking for a sobriety date Thanksgiving morning 1989 when I was on the cement floor one more time in the drunk tank in Fresno County. Second DUI, 20 years old. And my parents had to fish me out of the jail on Thanksgiving morning when they thought I was sober. The Marine Corps had changed me. Didn't change shit. By the way, the Marine Corps does not have power over alcoholism. and I can tell you, I prayed more sincerely, not cutting deals with God. I prayed more sincerely when I got home on Thanksgiving Day in my room, pleading that never, ever happened again, that I wanted to stop, and I meant it between me and God. Nobody saw that, and I was sincere. Not only did I drink 24 hours later, but I didn't see another sober date until May 9th. Well, it was in May 8th a little bit, but I basically didn't have any sobriety at all from that point till May 9th of 93. Plus, I quit asking. I wasn't praying. I wasn't asking for it. And I got it. Now, so in 21 years, I haven't always worked the steps with the same vigor or attention or willingness. I haven't always had the same sponsor. I haven't always had the same group. I haven't always gone to the same number of meetings. I've been in lots of service. I've been in no service. All these other things that people call the deal, right, have all been variable. They've all been variable. Okay? I have been a hypocrite, and I've also lived unspiritually on accident. Okay? And there's one constant that I can't explain, and I don't need to explain it, nor do I need to really understand it. And that is this thing called the grace of God that stands between me and alcohol, consistently, and has been. Okay? So why do people get away with it longer than others? That's not my decision. I don't even know if it's a decision. Okay? I know that in every real alcoholic's life, at some point, they will come to a crossroads in their sobriety that will require them to go from a place of just being in the grace of God, always having God in the rearview mirror, and just kind of taking it for granted, thankful, but taking it for granted, to where they will have to take the next step with that, which is what the book talks about, is conscious contact with God, a personal relationship. A relationship so close, it's talked about like father-child, a friend, a companion. This is not just relying on the grace. And I sponsor people that have more sobriety than me that finally hit that, and I've had people that hit that immediately. The other factor in this is that not everybody in AA is an alcoholic. And it's not my place to judge who they are and who they aren't, should be here or not be here. The only time that becomes a factor is if they're asking me for help, or I'm asking them for help. I don't need a hard drinker to be sponsoring me. Okay? I don't need somebody that doesn't require a conscious relationship with God just to get one foot in front of the other on a daily basis sponsoring. Okay? That doesn't understand that kind of need for a relationship with a higher power. It doesn't have to look like mine. Or mine doesn't look like theirs. But that's none of my business. A good friend of mine says that everything past my nose is none of my business. And anything I'm getting involved with that's past my nose is pure ego. And I happen to believe that. So, on page 30, how much time did that take?
Just forgot. You got a
bummer. I'm gonna go fast. All right, so on the very first paragraph, most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it's not surprising that our drinking career has been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. Okay. So, this is the great obsession of every alcoholic, if they're not. And the spiritual malady, which is what we'll later start talking about after the mental obsession, the number one lie, the number one self-delusion that the spiritual malady uses with the alcoholic is that they're making choices about their drinking. And so long as I think I'm making choices about my drinking, when I'm starting, when I'm continuing, and when I'm stopping, any part of that phase, I'm going to continue to rely on self. And for an alcoholic, selfishness kills. Or self-reliance kills, pardon me. It doesn't work. And so long as the spiritual mind can keep me in that lie, I will never seek the personal relationship with God that I need. The grace of God is great until you see the truth. And once you see the truth, then you need a personal relationship. And boy, it is a rude awakening when you see the truth. And hopefully you survive it. That place that you're talking about that seems to be random, not everybody survives. Most people actually don't survive that in sobriety. They just kind of disappear. You know? And I know I've been there. Now there's some interesting words in here, like the idea that somehow, someday. Today is yesterday's someday. That brings it right to the present. The next paragraph is going to say, we learned that we had to. That's a must in two words for those of you that don't believe in must in the AA. To fully concede to our innermost self that we were alcoholic. This is the first step in recovery. Sounds much different than what we see in the outline on the wall, right? The delusion that we are like other people, non-alcoholics, or presently, that's very key, right now, maybe has to be smashed. That's right now. What am I up to right now, at 21 years sober, or whatever, how long you've been sober, that is demonstrating that I now control not drinking? Do I look in the mirror and I know I claim to have done the steps, but I'm not sponsoring anybody? My book says that immunity from drinking comes from intensive work with other alcoholics, which means that if I'm not working intensive with alcoholics and I have the capacity to do so, I must think that I can get away with not drinking by not working with alcoholics. Why am I doing that? Because at some level, I think I can control not drinking. That I have power over not drinking. Do I do 11 steps on a daily basis? Do I really check in? I'm not talking about humming and chakra bowls and all that other stuff. That's fine. But am I getting in there and looking at the 13 questions in step 11 and doing that on a daily basis, checking in with my higher power, cleaning it up when it needs to be cleaned up? Am I doing that on a daily basis? How about just a couple of days a week? Why wouldn't I do that if I'm a real alcoholic and I fully concede to my innermost self that I am beyond human aid? Because presently I don't think I am. The great obsession of every alcoholic is that they're not. That they can control the drinking once they stop, and they can also control not drinking when they are stopped. When you look at control, you have to look at both sides of the fence, both sides of the equation. Okay? Why do I still have an 8-step list hanging out there? Well, it's pretty clear about if we don't clean up our amends, we're going to drink again. It's not a theory. It's a book that's written out of accounts and experiences. And I think most of us have probably been around rooms long enough to know people that just didn't do steps and they drank again or they died or both. This is not uncommon. Why am I not doing a fourth step? Why am I short-circuiting a fifth step? Why am I giving lip service to the six and seven because I don't understand it? I would only do this because I believe I'm a non-alcoholic and I can control not drinking presently. So this is home to everybody, any alcoholic that's sitting in the room of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what you do with it is your affair. Okay? This is why I'm a huge proponent, and he used to be, of of working the steps over again on a regular basis. I just started another set of steps. I'm in the fourth step now currently. And it's not redoing old stuff. It's stuff that I miss in steps 10 and 11 as I go throughout the year or so. But it seems to be about every year or 2 years I do the steps again. And I don't just automatically assume 1, 2, and 3 and start into 4. Because, as evidence of my last first step and what I was doing prior in the last 2 years, demonstrates that I somehow think, at 20 years sober, that I can control not drinking. And that's not true. Somewhere along the way, a lurking notion and reservation either grew or regrew. Okay? And we're done.
Okay, so...